So how you doing, Chris? On Point with Stuart Kaplan and Chris Pajota. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, Stu. How about yourself?
You know, I'm doing fine. I left the house. I had a funny encounter with my wife. She comes into the kitchen on my iPad, and she's like, who are you talking to? Are you on FaceTime? Like, who are you talking to? And I'm like, I'm not talking to anybody. She's like, I just heard you having this whole conversation. I'm like, no, I was talking to myself. She looks at me like, what? And I'm like, yeah, can you believe this article? And she's like, what article? But who are you talking to? I'm like, I'm not talking to anybody. I was just talking to myself because I'm just like so crazy that this crap would be published. But I'm reading an article basically on the front page of the New York Post that's published. And it says that, aha, we caught another digitally enhanced photo of the royal family, in particular, Kate Middleton. And I said to my wife, can you just explain to me, like, why is that news? Like, Kristen, everybody manipulates their photos when they post them. I mean, everybody wants to look their best. And I said, Kristen, like, am I like crazy? Like, what world am I living in? Like, we just went to a wedding. The bride had a makeup artist, had a hairdresser, had someone who did their nails. You know, you want to look your best because you're in front of so many people. So just explain to me, what world am I living in that a New York Post reporter is so just has nothing better to do but to write a story about a digitally enhanced photo that someone took of their family? Like, why is that news?
Yeah. It's not news, Stu. It's not. I think these people, they make a living off the royals. So if the royals go and do anything, if they even act like normal people, it's news for these people. They publish it. It's how they make a living. And it's just, it's absolute nonsense is what it is. You know, there's just so much nonsense in the world that that's become regular nonsense. Got a lot of nonsense to run through this evening for the audience, get our opinions on it out there. And also, it's going to be heavy on the lawfare area, your area of expertise.
All right.
So I'm going to throw out an issue for you. We'll talk about this one real quick. It's about the Supreme Court Justice Brown and her commentary on how the First Amendment hamstrings the federal government.
Well, first of all, Chris, I can't remember growing up until more recently that a Supreme Court justice in any way would ever come out and make a public comment. That in and of itself is just, that's just bizarre. That's just something we've never ever seen until more recently. I mean, if you look at the Supreme Court justices, when they attend the State of the Union address, they don't stand, they don't applaud, they don't acknowledge, they're right. Unemotional. And then all of a sudden she thinks that, you know, she needs to chime in and basically ratify or basically tell us how the Supreme Court judges should rule on basically telling the public, you know, us, that we, that they know better. They're going to basically put the leash around us and lead us down this, you know, corridor because we don't know what we're talking about, or we don't have common sense, or we don't have logic, or we don't have expertise. And certainly the worst case example is, you know, when COVID hit, you know, they somehow they found Dr. Fauci, you know, this person that no one had ever heard of, who all of a sudden became this world expert leading authority to tell us, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you need to stay home, keep your kids at home, wear a mask. And certainly don't forget, if you're driving in an automobile with your windows up, also wear a mask. I mean, and by the way, isn't it incredible that even today, once in a while, you look to your left or your right, and there's a person in a car by themselves wearing a freaking mask. I mean, what the fuck is going on? Like, holy shit.
For some folks, too, I think it's a social statement with the masks. Other folks actually have a health problem, which, hey, God bless them. But for other folks, I think it's more of a social statement than anything. As far as the Justice Brown goes, you know, the First Amendment and all the amendments were made to restrain the behavior of the government, right? They were to protect the citizens from a government that would become overly powerful and start infringing upon the rights of the citizens. So yes, it does hamstring the government by design by the founding fathers. So
yeah, but Chris, but in this case and in the last couple of years, I mean, we saw the curtain come down, and we now know that our government colluded and conspired with private enterprises, private companies, not only to stop what we were thinking and to take down and suppress our free speech, but then they posted disinformation to make us look like we were a bunch of morons and a bunch of sheep, and that our government and our officials knew better. I mean, in what world did we ever think that free speech, the First Amendment, would ever become so weaponized to be utilized in this type of fashion? Now, listen, I know that, and certainly with respect to propaganda and it being implemented as a way to sway public opinion in an effort to maybe help foreign entities or foreign governments or people that are living abroad because they're living in strife, and we want to try to help them remove what the existing government is. But to ever think that it was going to be turned on ourselves in such a sinister way, you know, here, that's the world we're living in.
It is. And I think what we've seen is it's been, the First Amendment's been weaponized, but it's also been attacked.
Yeah, absolutely.
From a different side. And I think what we have here, and I'm gonna dip my toe into the pool that you swim through, but I think what we have is for Justice Brown, this was part of that Missouri case that two states, Missouri and Louisiana, brought against the federal government for doing exactly that.
Yep.
And that's when she made that comment. So I think you have this imperfect balance right now of potential activism versus jurisprudence.
But what is scary, though, Chris, in my world, is especially when you get involved in litigation that you know is corrupt or dishonest, or that there was something nefarious that was done. You never, ever doubted that if, in fact, you could get your case to the steps of the Supreme Court of the United States, you knew that the Supreme Court justices were beyond reproach. They were not activists. They were fair. They were impartial. And they certainly represented with respect to what the scales of justice should be. And I always say the reason why there's a blindfold on that scales of justice is because the ruling should not, you know, factor in other variables, other extraneous motives. But now you have to really consider what is going on. Right. What is going on?
I heard a term used recently, and I thought it was very good, that people in our leadership positions, such as the Supreme Court, they've lost their emotional professionalism. They can't keep their emotions and their personal feelings out of things anymore. And I've seen that happening more and more across our government. It's dangerous. It's unprofessional. And that's where you start getting a lot of this bias that is kind of rushing to the surface of everything.
Yeah. I mean, before you know it, you know, Judge Roberts, he'll be doing a fucking TikTok video. I mean, seriously. I mean,
I wouldn't doubt it.
Right. So, I mean, and Justice Brown, all of a sudden, you'll see her doing some promotional TikTok video. That's what it's come to.
It's insane.
Yeah,
it is. I mean, but when I look at just, again, insanity, we'll hit this one real quick. But what do we got on the states of our union passing legislation to where non-U.S. citizens can become law enforcement officers?
Oh, you're setting me up.
Hey, it happened last year in Illinois. It's happening right now in California, and Colorado has also passed similar legislation. And what do we got on that, Stu?
You see, you are setting me up for hate mail, and I'm just going to listen. You know, listen, Chris, the United States of America has its long history and its identity. And it has the Constitution, it has the Declaration of Independence, it has the national anthem, it has the flag, it has the Pledge of Allegiance, one nation under God. I mean, there are certain principles that identify why it is that the United States is the greatest country on the planet. And by way of example, I took a trip to France last year. And when you go to France, you know you're in France because it's French. Now, ladies and gentlemen, save your hate mail. Just hear me out.
No, actually, I'd rather them send it, Stu.
Well, all right. Well, then send it to online online with Stuart and Chris at gmail.com. But let me just finish my thought here. Look, I understand that the United States offers opportunity to everyone that is amongst us all across this incredible planet called Earth. And that is why the United States is the only country in the world that people literally are willing to risk their lives to come here for opportunity. But with saying that, our language is English. We speak English. We are Americans. We hopefully are a God-fearing nation, but we are a very welcoming nation. And there are certain institutions that need to exemplify what it is that our heritage is and what our national origin is and who we are as Americans. Now, when you come to this country, and by the way, I'm talking about when you come here legally. Legally. You are here as being bestowed a privilege, not a right, but a privilege to come here. Now, most people come here for a short period of time. They come on vacation, visa through a visa program, and then they leave. They can't stay for more than 90 days, and then they leave. Unfortunately, in the world we're living in today, that doesn't exist because you just come across into Texas or through Arizona or vis-a-vis through California, and it doesn't matter what your intentions are. Yeah. Our borders are non-existent. But with saying that, I am all for when a person comes here legally as a privilege and contributes to our society and proves themselves as being worthy to eventually being bestowed the honor and the privilege of becoming a United States citizen. That is a down the road process because right. We want to make sure that you have the same values, the core values of what it is to be an American.
You're absolutely right.
All right.
You're absolutely right. Now, because I'll tell you, we are a nation of immigrants, and you keep hearing that argument, right?
Right.
And here's the thing, though. When we were welcoming mass immigration at Ellis Island early in the history of this country, the folks who were processing migrants still turned people away because they were not beneficial to the United States. And you had to show that you offered a benefit to the United States. And now people come here to get benefits.
Correct. And quite frankly, Chris, I don't necessarily trust people on their face as to what their true motivation is. And to entrust a person to become a sworn law enforcement officer who right. may have come illegally, and now to bestow them that opportunity to be a police officer or a law enforcement officer, what fucking world are we living in? That's ridiculous. And by the way, you know, maybe a other part of this equation is, are we that pathetic within the United States that we can't recruit citizens, Americans, to fill those vacancies or those positions, because why it is that we need to even think about or even consider people that are here illegally or here and that they're not U.S. citizens, and to give them that opportunity.
Look, look what we've done over the past 3 to 5 years. We've demonized law enforcement. We've neutered law enforcement. They've become crime watchers instead of crime fighters because they're afraid to get in trouble. I mean, when I'm looking at this, think about this part of it, right? You have someone who broke the law to get here. They're breaking the law to stay here, and they're going to enforce the laws of the United States on United States citizens. That is really, really messed up. And I'll tell you what I see a big problem there, because these people, they're not invested in the welfare of our citizens and communities. They're not. And I guess some of them make a distinction for the DACA folks, the delayed action for child arrivals because they were brought here as children. Hey, I get all that, but there's a process. They could have already probably been processed, right? And then you'll hear, well, the immigration system's broken. Well, then you know what? All of the Washington, D.C. knuckleheads should fix it instead of fighting about it. Since Reagan was president, they were fighting about it. So I'll just say this, Stu, before we move on to some other areas. 3 other states are looking at doing this, too. You're looking at Maryland, New Jersey, and New York are looking to allow this to happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, quite frankly, I hope that the island of Manhattan fucking floats away down the Harlem River or into the Hudson River and just falls within the abyss, because that place is never, ever in this lifetime going to be able to return to the beauty of what New York was all about, because it's a absolute cesspool.
Well, New York used to be the greatest, or not the greatest, one of the great cities of the world. And it's just horrific what they've done to it. So anything else on those before we move on?
No, I mean, listen, Chris, I could talk about this forever. Yeah. And listen, I'm all for, usually you hear people, it takes them 5, 6, 7, 8 years to obtain their citizenship. And I have to tell you, any person that I've ever had contact with that has earned that eventual right to be sworn in as a United States citizen, you see the emotion, the tears in their eyes of how much or how grateful they are to have been able to be bestowed a United States citizen. Well, but to think that I'm here for 6 months or a year and I'm going to entrust you to become a police officer. It's fucking crazy town to me.
It's insane, but it just shows the erosion of the culture in our country, right?
Yeah.
I mean, our cultural health is at risk right now. I'm sure you've seen this, but there's been the cultural erosion, but how people interact with law enforcement has also really gone down the tubes, right? Tell me what you think about this female singer who was had what I would consider to be an unfortunate interaction with law enforcement. What do you think about this young lady?
Well, here's a perfect example of exactly what not to do. And I have this conversation all the time. Certainly a lot of times when people come to me and they end up in a particular situation. Look, ladies and gentlemen, most of your interaction with law enforcement will be basically generally a routine traffic stop. You know, you ran a stop sign, you got pulled over for speeding, or let's just say your tint on your window is too dark. They pull you over and you don't have a driver's license. Let me just stop right there. Most police agencies in this day and age have body camera recorders. That means that the interaction from the time the cop activates his red and blue lights and exits his vehicle, his body camera is going to capture everything that happens thereafter, to include the interaction with you. And I always tell people, when you are engaged with a police officer during a routine traffic stop, do not attempt to utilize that encounter as being in a court of law, but also have the smarts to understand that if you felt that he or she did you wrong or didn't do something that you thought should have been done, it's all on body camera. And utilize that evidence, during your presentation when you plead not guilty and you go to court. But more importantly, ladies and gentlemen, I can't overemphasize this. If a police officer directs you to exit your vehicle, do yourself a favor, comply. Yeah. Get out of the car.
Just follow instructions. Follow instructions. I mean, this particular incident, the young lady, she was a Latina singer, I guess, and pulled over for having fake diplomatic tags on her car. And
don't forget the boyfriend said he didn't feel safe because, I don't feel safe. I mean, really?
Yeah.
I mean, horseshit.
He's saying he felt threatened because the first thing you do, of course, is take out your smartphone and start filming. But here's the problem. And this is like you said, and this is a public service announcement. When you interact with the police, and again, it shows the erosion in our culture, there's a bad attitude immediately. And sometimes it's the cop, not saying they're without fault, but most times it's people in the public. And basically, they have a lack of respect for authority. Sometimes there's language barriers that cause that unease, but usually they're looking for that viral moment on social media, right? They whip out that phone, they start acting very rudely, they start swearing and cursing at the cop, and these police officers, they have a certain amount of professional training, but they're still human beings, and when you start abusing them to a certain point, they're not going to stand for it.
No, right? And Chris, generally speaking, when a cop gets to a point where he directs you to get out of your car, generally it's for officer safety because, quite frankly, he doesn't know who you are. He doesn't know what the risks are, whether or not you have a firearm in the car. At the end of the day, he wants to have full control of you. And so don't fight him on that. And let me just say one thing, Chris. Yeah. I've never had a person who has told me, oh, my God, Stuart, I got pulled over. And he wrote me a ticket. What should I do? I said, what was the encounter like? Were you very cooperative or did you act like an ass? No, I was very respectful. I was very polite. Mm. In fact, I told him, sorry. I said, I'm going to guarantee you one thing. He will remember that. Go to court when he's standing out in the hallway, grab him. Because he may have had to write you that ticket because maybe you had a sergeant or a lieutenant who was giving him a hard time because he was just not doing whatever he was supposed to do. And the sergeant said, you better come back with 10 tickets this morning or otherwise I'm going to write you up. So maybe instead of him giving you just a warning, he wrote you a ticket because his sergeant was being an asshole to him. I'm telling you, if you can find that cop in the courtroom or in the hallway of the courtroom, 9 out of 10 times, if you go up to him and say, hey, you remember me? You wrote me that ticket. Mm-hmm. Hey, can you just work this out, forgo the points or reduce it? 9 out of 10 times, if it was a good interaction, that cop will do the right thing by you then.
Well, all you need is a bit of kindness. Those cops will help. They'll cut you a break if they can.
Absolutely.
If they can, they will cut you some slack. There's no two ways about it.
One last thing.
Sure.
If it's an asshole cop, the only thing that you're going to accomplish by you then thinking I'm going to be a bigger asshole is 10 out of 10 times that asshole cop, he's going to win every single time. Just remember that.
Agreed. There's no benefit to trying to face down the cops and then give them your own legal opinions, like you said. And if you're just polite, courteous, professional, and you want to file a complaint, do so. Right. But don't litigate that right there. You're right. That's a completely losing cause.
100%.
Hey, what do you think about this? Again, we're talking about eroding culture here in the United States. But what about this school? There's a school in the Boston area, Boston, Massachusetts. They're a on-premises boarding school, kind of a specialty school. In 2022, they decided that they were going to ban cell phones, right? So I think there are about maybe 50 to 60 students that live there. And of course, it was pandemonium, right? Of course, everybody had their cell phones taken away. Parents were beside themselves. The kids didn't know what to do with themselves. And it was just a mess, right? But what do you think happens, Stu, after they dried out for a week or so? What do you think happens?
They are my heroes. I'd like to replicate that implementation in my own life with my own children. I have to tell you, the school is Buxton. It's a boarding school in Massachusetts. And this is a great story, and I can only imagine, really, truly, and you can kind of see how this happened. So the teachers were saying, when they were looking up out into the classroom, you know, these kids, you know, all the kids had their heads down because they had their phones in their laps and they're texting, they're Snapchatting, they're on YouTube, whatever they're doing everything but paying attention to the teachers. And the teachers finally got fed up and said, listen, this is ridiculous. We're trying to teach these kids. We know they have their phones. They're not paying attention to us. We're going to ban the phones. Well, there was a mutiny. The kids were like, oh my God, you just have unplugged my umbilical cord from my lifeline. I am in the fetal position. You have paralyzing me. I'm not going to be able to live my life. Well, lo and behold, as you said, within a couple of weeks, I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, go out and find this article. It's actually a video, and it is so heartwarming. It is so welcoming to realize there is a possibility to save our children, because they go and they interview the kids. And you know what's amazing? Forget about the faculty. The kids say, thank you. It was the greatest thing that was ever forced upon me. I had to reinvent to learn how to engage my friends, have conversations. I sat at a table and had dialogue and talks, and we were speaking, because one kid said we used to sit at the kitchen table and everybody had their phone out and no one was talking.
Well, Stu, nobody knows how to socialize anymore.
Why do you have to? You got your you got your best friend right next to you.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting too is, you know, just from the social benefits of the, you know, what happened at that school, because they still had internet access via computers and other, you know, iPads and things like that they did their schoolwork on, but they just didn't have that constant companion of the cell phone or the smartphone, so to speak. But think about this, right? And you have children. I mean, my kids are a little bit older now, but think about when they were younger, how it interferes with their developmental years. You put these kids on these smartphones, and they're supposed to be learning how to learn executive skills, right? They're supposed to learn how to manage, organize. They're supposed to learn how to socialize. They're supposed to learn coping skills. And you can see it in a lot of the younger generations. They don't have it. Yeah. And they're so dependent on the socialization through the internet that they can't function among people well. They struggle.
And it takes away your wanting to learn how to have an engaging conversation with someone and how to extract information from the person that you're talking to. These kids don't have to do it, because all they do is they go on their phones, and whatever they see, whatever idiot is giving them some information, they look at that person. And listen, I've heard this. I mean, I'm ashamed to admit this. Oh, Dad, look, he's got 10 million followers. And I'm like, I don't give a shit if he has 100 fucking million followers. The guy's still a moron. The guy's still an idiot. You shouldn't be listening to that crap. But to the point, this generation coming up, they're looking at your followers. They're looking at how many people you're able to influence. And if you're able to influence that amount of people, well, that legitimizes you to be someone that I hold in high esteem and someone I respect.
It's crazy. But still, it's in that make-believe world.
There you go.
It's in that make-believe world, right? That phone battery runs out. Nothing of that matters anymore. You know, when my kids were younger and they, you know, my kids were younger when the smartphones were just kind of coming around, you know, cell phone. I remember in school, the teacher started letting them use their phones to do math. And I said, no, you got to learn how to do math. And they said, well, why? Right? Why should I? I can just do it on my phone. My phone will tell me everything I want to know. And I'm thinking, we've taken away a lot of the kids' ability to critically think and problem solve too, because they have this magic device in their hand. So again, that cultural erosion, I think the smartphone has been an accelerator of a lot of that cultural erosion.
Listen, there are words that come to my mind, but I can't say them. But I will tell you something that happens. And I know the viewing audience can relate to this. You're at the mall and you go up to the counter to like either order something or you want to pay for something. And you're the only person in the goddamn store. and there's a salesperson or some cashier or whatever, and they have their phone, and you see them, and they're clearly on their phone, and you know they see you, but whatever they're doing on their phone,
you have to wait.
You got to fucking wait. I mean, yeah. I just want to say, are you fucking kidding me? Like, who, as an owner of a business, would tolerate that type of behavior? And Kristen's like, Stuart, you're just getting old. It's just, you know, you're older. It's just the generation. And no. I'm not willing to surrender to that. Listen, if you work in my office, or if I owned a business, meaning like a fast food or a sneaker store, it doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah, no phones.
No fucking phones during work hours. Now, yeah,
no phones.
That's it. There's always the exception if, God forbid, there's an emergency and you got to go to your locker and get your phone and make a phone call. But this idea that they have their phones accessible and they're going to be on their phones in public view in front of you.
Well, they're not representing my business or my organization properly while they're doing Instagram or whatever they're doing. So, again, just that erosion of professionalism and everything else, it's just a shame.
Yeah.
Hey, let's move to some more lawfare. Let's get you back to where you're comfortable, Stu. Get you out of technology here.
Oh, my God.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about this Georgia District Attorney, Fannie Willis. I mean, she got to stay on the Trump trial. And I don't know, man. I just think it looks – that's kind of bad judgment by the judge. Tell us, what you're an officer of the court. Why'd you get to stay?
That I can't tell you. But I will tell you, Chris, there's one – obvious question, and listen, I will just say there were a lot of smart lawyers that were engaged on behalf of the president, meaning the former president, number 45. But there was one question, the most obvious question, that would have to disqualify her. And that is, she said, my daddy told me to keep cash in my house. That's the way I was raised. Okay, I don't have any problem with that. But no one asked her what the source of the cash, where the cash came from. Did you cash your paycheck? You've been in public service. You're earning a paycheck. Your check either goes direct deposit, or they actually give you a check and you deposit in the bank. Or did you go to the bank and cash the check and get the cash, and that's the money you put under your mattress? No one asked her that, and I, to this day, want to know that if she had $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, in fact, she said at one time she had like $20,000 in her house, what was the source of that cash? Where did that fucking cash come from? Was she getting cash from an outside source? Was she doing something other than being the district attorney? Where is the source of that? And that was missed. But Chris, I have to tell you, the degree, it should have been an eye-opener to everyone. I don't care what side you lean on. It does not matter. In my world, there is an impression, not an impression, there is an expectation of what the district attorney or a prosecutor, how he or she should present themselves and how they carry themselves. And I felt that I was watching a reality TV program that degraded and just showed nothing but disrespect. She showed disrespect not only to herself, but to her office, to the legal profession, to the criminal justice system. And she is the highest elected criminal justice official in Fulton County. I was ashamed and I was embarrassed. Now, you asked me about the disqualification. It's so clear. It's so unambiguous. But the judge had to split the baby, so to speak. And I think here is what I think arguably the judge himself is hoping for. He disqualified the lead prosecutor, her paramour, her boyfriend. He just granted permission to Trump's team to go take an appeal, meaning take an interlocutory appeal, meaning prior to the trial, I'm going to stay these proceedings and you can go appeal it. I think he split the baby because he has to work there. He has to live there. He has to breathe there. He's hoping that this shit sandwich somehow will be taken away from him and the appellate court will do what is right and direct it back to him that there is a conflict of interest and that it is it's a conflict that can no longer be reconciled. It's an irreconcilable conflict and she is gone.
Yeah. You know what? I think you're right on point. When I'm looking at it, first of all, I mean, her candor and her ethical position, they were just destroyed by this. But here's the thing. The judge, I fault him for this. She is who she is, and she is what she is. And he's 36 years old. He's got a long career ahead of him, right? This could be, you know, a fork in the road for him. And I think he's also running for that office because he was specially appointed to that position. And he's 36. He's trying to keep his legal career online. But here's the problem I see. I'm watching our legal system break down bit by bit, part by part, because you have the components that make up the legal system are being overtaken by activism, by cowardice, self-interest. And I think there's still a sense of jurisprudence, but it's been overwhelmed by those other factors.
But Chris, to your point, in any other time in history, a prosecutor in her position would have voluntarily removed herself. That's not the world we're living in anymore. No. They doubled down. They doubled down.
She's looking to make a career on this.
Correct. And here's what's going to happen. Yeah. And you mark my words, that lady will end up on CNN, MSNBC, on whatever that crap is. Mark my words.
No, she'll be a legal analyst.
There you go. And she'll make a lot of money because of that.
Yeah, her and the other one in New York.
Yep.
Well, so I think she has other political aspirations in New York. But all right, let's talk about this real quick too. Is another, just again, our legal system. I don't understand it. How is it possible that we have in the district court, District of Illinois, that now we have a judge saying that illegal aliens, criminal aliens, are now protected by the Constitution and the Second Amendment now saying that they can possibly own firearms. I'm stupefied by this.
And there is no rational, logical thought process, whether it's academic or whatever else is out there intellectually, that in any way, ladies and gentlemen, look, you can't illegally enter another fucking country. Just mark my words, because I've done a lot of traveling. If you want to go to France, or you want to go to England, or you want to go to Germany, or you want to go to Dubai, or you want to go to Singapore, or Japan, or China, you have to go legally. And I will tell you that if you try or attempt to enter those countries illegally, they're going to take your ass and ship you back without a hesitation. And
oh, Stu, but you might get the benefit of some time in jail there too, right?
Well,
exactly.
Amen.
But here's the problem. But when I say I am successful, though, in evading their border security and their law enforcement, why would I then be entitled to have a firearm in some of these countries?
Listen,
it just doesn't make sense.
Chris, listen, I've traveled, and I am going to tell you, and anybody who's listening to this that has traveled abroad, your behavior, I guarantee you, for example, when you're traveling through an international airport abroad, you're pretty well behaving yourself and showing the proper respect and decor, because they don't fucking fool around there. I mean, trust me. And Chris, to my point that I always bring this up, you know, God bless the Israelis. When you turn 18, you have to join. Yeah, you have to go into the armed forces. I have said And by the way, if I ever run for political office, I'm going to move to make this a law that when you are here in the United States as an American, when you turn 18, you must be sent to some godforsaken country for a week or two. I want you. By the way, so Stuart Kaplan now enacts a law that we're going to send you to Haiti. And I tell you why I'm going to send you to fucking Haiti. Because I guarantee you, and just like you brought up, what's her name, Grimes, the basketball player who got stuck in Russia, right? Because she thought she knew better and the United States sucked and we as Americans are spoiled and we're all assholes. Well, let me tell you something. That woman got a rude awakening. And when she came back to the United States after having been a guest of their judicial system, she kissed the ground that she walks on now living in the United States, because now she has an honest perspective of how lucky we are to live here in the United States. And what I'd like is to take these kids when they turn 18 and send them. Listen, by the way, anybody who's gone to, you know, some of these islands, and I know this is going to just holy shit the hate mail that I'm going to get, but just pick an island that you took a cruise to and you get off the fucking cruise and you're looking around and you're like, I'm going to get back on the boat. I'm good. I don't need to do any shopping, because you're in fear that you're going to lose your life. As Americans, do not speak ill of the United States. Do not goddamn kneel during the national anthem or desecrate our fucking flag because you're so goddamn spoiled that you never left the United States to understand what it is to be in another country, and then understand in the hypocrisy to understand people are sacrificing their lives to come to the United States. So how fucking bad is it really here?
You know what? Send us some hate mail, folks. Yeah. Let us know how what your thoughts are on that. On Point with Stuart and Chris at gmail.com. Let us know how you feel about Stu's position on international relations.
Or tell me that I need medication. That people are going to be like, he needs to be medicated. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just telling you, you may be thinking it, but you're afraid to say it. And what Chris and I agreed when we embarked on this podcast, this new journey, is I was going to say what I know most of you are thinking. You're just afraid because you don't want to be judged for what's really going on in your mind. And just like, by the way, Chris, I want to tell you, and I love him to death. I love Chris Cuomo. Chris brought me on his program last Friday. And he brought me on to talk about this subway shooting where this guy comes on the subway. He picks on this this little guy, and the bad guy is beating the crap out of him. And then there's an incident where some woman stabs the bad guy, which distracts him. He lets the little guy off. The little guy backs up. And now this bad guy goes to his jacket and pulls out the equalizer, his illegal gun. And then he recoils the gun, loads around, and points it at this little guy and at this woman. And so to his credit, the little guy disarmed this guy, the bad guy, took away his gun, and shot him several times. And I told Chris, why are we talking about mental health? Why are we talking about the National Guard? I know what everybody's thinking. We should put a medal on that person because he stood up for himself and he stood up for the little guy and stood up for all of us, because I know you're fucking thinking about it, because he did what was right. He not only defended himself and that woman and everybody on the train, but you know what? Sometimes it's the equalizer, and that guy, that bad guy, got exactly what he deserved.
Well, he got what he asked for.
Exactly.
Right? And here's the problem. I guess you can say the person who was attacked, the initial victim, he did what used to be right, Stu. Right?
Chris,
he did what used to be right. Yeah. Now you're supposed to just assume the fetal position.
Take out your phone. I'm going to film it. I'm not going to intervene. I'm not going to get involved. I'm not going to break it up. I'm just going to be a filmer.
I'm going to watch it. A YouTuber. I'm going to put it on the internet. Hope I can get a viral video. And I hope I don't get sued or sent to jail for protecting myself and others. It's a terrible thing. Before we move on, I'm going to ask you one more question. How do you think these illegal aliens are going to pass the background checks that we as American citizens have to pass? I'll stop. That's a rhetorical question. Okay. It's a rhetorical
question. Well, first of all, they'd have to be able to read the questions that to begin with.
The ATF 4473 form is not offered in all the different 195 countries around the world. Yeah. Let's take a quick look in the rearview mirror. Let's talk about the testimony from former special counsel Herr, Robert Herr, who had interviewed the president regarding his the president's, not hers, but his handling of classified documents, right? So you have this situation, the current President Biden, former vice president, and before that senator, had classified materials in his possession. He was not authorized to have them outside of a secure compartmented information facility, otherwise known as the SCIF, and he had them at home in his garage, not secured properly, right? So the special counsel interviews him and makes a few, I would say, a few odd determinations as to whether or not to charge. He says he's a well-meaning older man or elderly gentleman, and that he was talking about maybe him having some memory problems or cognitive decline. So, Stu, in your experience as an officer of the court, I mean, I'll take it from the law enforcement side later, but when do you take those factors into account when you're simply looking to charge?
So I liked him. I thought he was credible. I thought he was almost honest, but not to the point, because he really, at the end of the day, let Joe Biden off the hook. And let me just explain this to you. I've had cases, historical cases, where someone has committed a crime, and I'll just say, let's just say a sexual battery or a sexual assault to a minor. And now 20 years later, the minor is an adult, and the minor as an adult goes to law enforcement, and now they conduct an investigation. My client, who unfortunately has been diagnosed with cancer, congenital heart disease, let's just say, medically speaking, they're terminal, or they're incapacitated, meaning they're in bad shape. That incapacity is not a defense to the underlying criminal potential charges, meaning to the elements of the crime. The incapacity or the mental infirmary or the health condition is a potential assessment point for the prosecution. Right. Not to determine innocence or guilt,
but punishment.
Punishment, but also it opens up the door for prosecutorial discretion to say, we're not excusing this person's behavior. We believe they did it, but we think that if we go through and expend all of these resources, at the end of the day, the person is probably going to be dead. It is not an affirmative defense that Joe Biden today in 2024 or in late 2023 can't tie his shoes and chew gum at the same time. That is not a defense to something he did 10 years ago, because had they looked at it 10 years ago when he had his mental faculties, he would have been charged and he would have gone to jail. And so so for me, Herr took it to the goal line, and it was within his ability to push it over into the end zone.
So you're saying he fumbled at the goal line.
He fumbled at the goal line. But I will tell you, he's the closest one to maintain some impartiality and some degree of legitimacy and credibility.
I thought he showed more candor than most of those type of special counsels.
I agree with you.
So, but I think we have to see how that rolls forward too, because now a precedent's been set, and you can see the selective application of the legal authorities against former President Trump.
Correct.
So it'll be interesting to see how that plays into that case. I think we're starting to run low on time.
We're almost out of time.
I'm going to skip the woke watch for tonight. There's a lot of wokeness out there, folks. Be careful. but this is going to be one of my favorite parts of the show. I know it's Stuart's favorite when we do the speed round. We do some life by the numbers for tonight. We'll do some other topical areas for Stu, get his opinion on a few things, and see where that goes. So we're going to do a little speed round here for you, Stu.
All right. I didn't do too well last week, but go ahead, Chris.
All right. What does this mean to you? The number 7.2%.
The guy who goes around and tastes pizzas, and it's one of his high scores on pizza.
Not even close.
All right, what is it?
In 2022, it's according to a survey, it's part of the U.S. adult population that identified as LGBT.
That sounds like a very small percentage of our population here in the United States.
But it seems to be the dominant social direction that everything's going in, amazingly.
You said that very eloquently, by the way. I was going to be a shithead, but thank you. You said it very eloquently. Okay.
All right. What about this? How about this? This is a nice round number for you. 20%.
20%. Oh, God. I don't know.
All right. It is the representation of Gen Z people. Now, that's between the years of 12 and 27 years old, who in 2022 identified as LGBT. 1 in 5.
Say that. What age?
Gen Z, which is considered right now to be people who are between ages 12 through 27.
You're telling me 20% of that age group identified with the opposite sex?
No, that they identified as being LGBT themselves. So 1 in 5 children are now identifying as LGBT.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. All right. So just as a little perspective builder for the evening.
Okay.
How about this number here, Stu? 5.5 million.
A good amount of money.
Well, it will be for the United States, no doubt, because that's the number of people identified by USAID, which is a government agency that goes and doles out all of our money around the globe. These are the people in Haiti identified as needing humanitarian aid.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Okay.
Last number, 653,000.
A solid middle-class salary in the United States.
No, that's what you need to be solid middle-class.
Well, except that if you listen to what's his name, Bill Maher, he said, why are we all crying about eggs being $25 or the fat? By the way, Chris, when is the last time you went to the supermarket and bought those Tide Pods? I was at the supermarket that the woman scanned the pods. They were $30.
Yeah,
could you imagine being in college and having to spend $30 your allowance on detergent?
No, because the kids all walk around like dirty slobs now. So
well, you're right. Matter. So it's not the middle class salary. What is 650,000?
It is the number of people classified as homeless in the United States as of December 2023. So we have money that we're going to dole out for humanitarian aid for 5.5 million potentially in Haiti, but we don't seem to have the resources to take care of what I would consider to be maybe a little more than 10% of that number for our own people who are homeless in the United States.
Well, listen, did you see AOC, her neighborhood where she represents?
Awful. It looks like
a third world country,
like a Mexican barrio.
And listen, I'm born and raised in New York, as a lot of the listeners are, and I'm sure they can appreciate it. How is that in any way tolerable? And the only thing I can say as an excuse is when you're living up there, you become so desensitized. Do you really think that's acceptable that you walk outside your building and it's filled with all homeless? Come on, people, we're better than that.
I think they've been desensitized, beaten down, Stu, and I also think that they've been cowered into not saying anything for fear of being called names.
Yeah. Chris, I just got the 2-minute warning.
Okay, let me do this then. Let me hit the gratitude, and then we'll do any last words. Gratitude, of course, Stuart and I and the rest of the production team here at the On Point show. We'd like to thank all of our law enforcement, first responders, military, everybody who works to keep society running day to day. I'm talking our medical folks, our people in the power industry, sanitation, builders, everybody. Thanks for everything you do. We appreciate it. And nobody thanks you enough to, that you keep this magic running every day. And I heard, I don't know if you ever listened to Jordan Peterson, but I find him to be very interesting at times. And he said, the things that we do and the societies that we keep running, it's a miracle every day.
Amen.
So I'll leave it there. And last words for you, Stu.
Chris, all I say is try to make yourself better each and every day. Try to reach out to someone and just hopefully change their life. And just thank God for how lucky and how privileged we are to be Americans and to live within the United States of America. Chris, my brother, I appreciate it.
Stu, thank you. Have a great night.
You too, buddy.